Our choir director, Ray Ellis, got this email sent to him from my email account, as did our Reverend Jan Durham, and probably others of you did too. Hello, Ray. And Jan got one that said, "Hello, Jan. I need you to know if you are available, as I have something personal I need to assist with. I need you to please make a transfer to someone for the amount of $7,650. Next week, I can refund the money to you. Let me know if you can do this so I can send you the payee's account information. Regards, Reverend Billy." My email account has obviously been hacked. If any of you have received this email, I am sorry. You can still send me some money if you'd like. But this is not from me. I would never ask you for more than $5,000. Anyway, I changed my password, so hopefully you won't get another one until they figure out my new password, and I'm sure they will. You know, I came to Asbury 24 years ago, and I preach an average of 46 sermons a year. So I've preached well over 1,000 sermons here on the corner of Henry and Waters. Virginia Holliday is the... Thank you. You thought this would be my last one. Is that why you're applauding? All right. Virginia Holliday is the only person besides my wife, Sherry, who's been here for all 24 years. Virginia never misses a Sunday, so she deserves an award for having to listen to all of these sermons. Randy, will you please give Virginia some flowers? So too does my wife, Sherry, because the first 8 years at Asbury, I was also serving Wesley Oak United Methodist Church, which had a 9:30 service. So poor Sherry had to sit through the sermon twice on Sunday. So Sherry, you get some flowers too. As you might imagine, I have repeated a story or two over the years. But the story I'm about to share, I've never told from this pulpit. It's been something I've kept mostly in confidence. About a year after I arrived at Asbury, the church had started to grow considerably. Our theater had been formed, and people who attended the shows and people who were cast in the shows started visiting us on Sundays for our worship services. One of our new members was a woman I'll call Susie. That is not her real name. Susie was incredibly helpful, a very giving and very generous person. Back in those days, the church had very little money, so things we would get experts to do for us today, we tried to do ourselves back then. For instance, we had a big tree right in the middle of our parking lot that had rotted, and we were worried it would fall and hurt someone. And before I knew it, Susie recruited her husband and her two sons to tackle the job themselves, and lo and behold, they got it down. Susie also got very involved with our theatrical productions. She didn't want to be on stage, but she did whatever she could to support the actors and their shows. On a number of occasions, she even prepared meals for the entire cast of these large musical productions. Just always giving, which was a bit overwhelming and a bit surprising because she and her family had very little money. Very little resources. I didn't know how she did it all. At the same time, something very disturbing started happening here at the church that most people didn't know about. We started receiving anonymous letters in the mail, threatening letters, threatening me, threatening some of our church members, and the threats were due to our acceptance of gay and lesbian people. I would have said our LGBT people, but back in those days, we just had two letters, L and G. Since the threats involved the United States mail, the FBI had to get involved. So this was a very disturbing time for us. At the same time, a prominent rabbi in our community approached me about a project he wanted to do. He wanted to form a group of people from various religions and backgrounds to meet on a consistent basis to see how in sharing our lives together, people's lives could be transformed, and then how these people could possibly impact the broader community after having this experience. The rabbi would facilitate the group, and he wondered if the meetings could be held at Asbury. And again, back in those days, all we had was a worship service and the theatrical production. So I said, sure, use our building. The rabbi said that he would love for me to choose some members of Asbury to participate in the group. He asked that I ask people who could keep what was said in the group confidential. Confidentiality, he said, is a must in order for people to trust each other to share. In the meantime, Susie wanted to meet with me about something she said was very important. And she came to my office and shared something that took me by surprise. Those of you who come to talk with me know that this never happens. I have heard it all. You can't shock me. But at this time, I was a very young minister, and Susie broke me in real well, because she told me that she had multiple personalities. I can't remember exactly how many identities Susie had, but there were at least three or four. Well, I had had training and basic counseling in seminary. I had training when I did chaplaincy work at New York Hospital and Sloan Kettering. But I had not had any specific training regarding multiple personalities. As you know, this particular disorder is pretty rare. It's not the same thing as schizophrenia. All I knew about multiple personality disorders was that they usually manifested because the person had suffered a tremendous amount of abuse. I asked Susie to tell me more about her situation, and she shared that one of her other personalities constantly puts her life in danger, puts her in dangerous situations. One time was she found herself on top of the Savannah Bridge. But fortunately, the police had rescued her each time this happened. Not long after this, Susie went on a trip overseas, and when she came back home, I noticed that she had gotten her hair cut very short, and as she was coming out of the sanctuary after the worship service, I said, "Susie, I really like your new haircut." And Susie, who was usually very positive at church, looked at me with a stern look on my face and said, "I'm not the one who cut it." Susie soon met with me again, and she had heard about the group that the rabbi was forming, and she wanted to be part of it. She really wanted to be part of it. And I said, "That's good, but I need to ask you something. The rabbi is going to stress confidentiality. And I know you, that you, Susie, the person I'm talking to right now, can be confidential. But Susie, can you guarantee me that your other personalities can be confidential?" And there was a long pause. And she said, "No, I can't do that." And I said, "I really appreciate your honesty, but I'm sorry, you can't be part of this group. The rabbi specifically said that it is for people who can keep things confidential." Susie walked out of the room, and I never saw her again. I could have handled the situation better, and I'd like to think I would handle it better and differently today, having more experience. But what's interesting is that after Susie stopped coming to Asbury, we stopped receiving the anonymous threatening letters in the mail. We never received one again. And then I remembered something. Susie had told me that she had a brother who was gay and who had died of AIDS. She said, "I miss my brother so much. I want to help all of our gay members." And then I realized what had happened. Susie was very compassionate, overly compassionate to our gay members because of her brother. But Susie also had another personality that was very angry, overly angry because of her brother. What you hope will happen for a person with multiple personalities is that he or she commits him or herself to long-time therapy so that the different personalities can unite and fuse into one. So that in Susie's case, you have a personality that can hold both her compassion and her anger together in tension with one another. All of us have different thoughts about issues, with one thought being more dominant than others. But the other thoughts are still there. It's like when an old friend comes to visit us from out of town and stays with us. We love it. We haven't seen them in such a long time. We can't wait to be with them. But we also don't want them to stay with us forever. We want them to leave at some point so life can get back to normal. So it's, "Oh boy," and good riddance. We have contrasting different feelings about things. Those thoughts and feelings are all real and valid, and we're able to hold them all together. If we don't, we have multiple personalities. If we only felt one of those ways, we'd get ourselves in big trouble, wouldn't we? If we're only wanting people to come visit us constantly, we will never be able to hold a job. We'd never be able to pay for a house for them to come visit. If we only want people to leave, then we live a life of isolation, probably becoming bitter and angry, detached. The key is not to fall into the trap of one-way thinking, or what we could also call tribal thinking. Politics and religion have a lot in common. And one of the things they have in common is that both of them are very susceptible to tribal thinking, one-way thinking. Our way is the only way. People can become fanatics with religion and politics, and that can be very, very dangerous, destructive, paralyzing. So Jesus walks into a synagogue and starts teaching, and the things he is saying have never been said before. The things that he is teaching have never been taught before. It's all new and different. And one of the persons in the congregation can't handle it. He's a one-way thinker, and he explodes. I've often wondered if he was a first-time visitor, or if he was the chair of the church council. But it really doesn't matter because it can happen to anyone. The text says he has an unclean spirit. And we automatically have images of the exorcist. But in ancient times, an unclean spirit could represent a variety of things that we would call something else today. Did he have a mental illness? Or some other emotional disorder, depression, bipolar? Did he have a physical illness, seizures? No one can say for sure. We don't know. But for the purpose of this sermon, he was a one-way thinker. Because one-way thinking can make you sick. It can paralyze you. It can make you do some crazy things. It can give you an unclean spirit. One-way thinking is the same thing as a closed mind. When we have a closed mind, we stop looking at new opportunities. We stop seeking new possibilities. And because we can't see things in new ways, we get stuck and stop growing. Helen Downing has been leading a Bible study here at the church for over 100 years. In the early 1900s, she started teaching the year-long disciple Bible study. And every year since, she has had some kind of study, Old Testament, New Testament, Paul's letters, you name it. And the other day, she came to me and said, I'd like to do something a little different for our next study. I'd like to use a book written by the owner of the Savannah Sand Naps. He likes to wear a yellow tuxedo, and the book is called Find Your Yellow Tux. She said, that guy has done something no one thought was possible. He has made the Savannah Bananas a booming success. They are constantly selling out Grayson Stadium. You can't get a ticket. And I bet we can learn something from him and have a little fun doing it. The person Helen was talking about is named Jess Cole. And he is a master of thinking out of the box. And I appreciate Helen thinking out of the box. And to start the study, Helen is going to get Jesse to come to Asbury in his yellow tux and give a talk for a little fee, of course. Because Jess has a lot of P.T. Barnum in him. And for a little fee, you are all invited to Jesse's presentation. It will be during the day on February 13th, right? 13th? I think in the morning, and then the pancake supper will be that night. And so we'll tell you more about this next Sunday. But I love Helen's willingness to try something new, to learn something new. That's healthy thinking. That's how we grow. I don't know if Helen realizes it or not, but one of her favorite words is the word interesting. She says it all the time. Interesting, right? Someone will say something to her about something going on in Savannah or in the world or some new app or some new something, and she'll say, interesting. And what she is saying is, that's fascinating. Tell me more about it. That's the opposite of a closed mind. And so Helen and others like her who have an open mind are not stuck in just seeing things one way. Unless you are talking about the Alabama Crimson Tide. And then Helen starts becoming possessed by an unclean spirit. Because when it comes to college football, she becomes fanatical and can only see things one way, just as many Georgia fans do. But outside of college football, Helen has the ability to have her own thoughts and ideas and beliefs, but at the same time, be open to learning new things, always stretching, growing. And see what it does for you? She looks good for someone 117 years old. We were not meant to be one-way thinkers. We were created to be like God, who is non-dualistic. Isaiah 45:7, 45, verse 7, is a passage about God. It reads, I form the light and create the darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, am in all things. God embraces all opposites. It's not one or the other. Barbara Brown Taylor reminded us at January Adventure recently that every pasture has its turds and stickers along with the deep wells and patches of clover. The speakers at January Adventure reminded us about how people once thought that everything revolved around us, around the earth. And then Copernicus revealed that we are the ones revolving, that the sun is at the center. And we need to remember that because Christians have a tendency to think that Christianity is at the center and every other religion should revolve around us. But the truth is, God should be at the center with Christianity and other religions revolving around God. Richard Rohr says, we're all pointing to the same moon, meaning God, and we're arguing who has the best finger. Speaking of fingers, in 1970, when I was about 11 years old, there was a Christian movement in our nation called One Way. It was especially popular, very popular here in the South. The logo for the One Way movement was a hand with its index finger pointing to the heavens, signaling there's only one way to get to heaven, only one way to God. Thousands of these stickers were passed out of these One Way logos, and I put one right on the front of my football helmet. I did. I wanted everyone I played against to know how to get to heaven. At that age and on that team, I played quarterback on offense and middle linebacker on defense. So when I played quarterback, everyone on the other team on defense could see my sticker. And then when I was middle linebacker, everyone on their offensive team could see my one-way sticker pointing to heaven. They could see how Christian I was just before I tried to knock them to kingdom come. Here's what you do to get to heaven. Now I'm going to try to put you there. I look back and I can't believe I did that. I can't believe leaders, adults of the church, actually taught this kind of arrogant theology and taught it to us children. It's taken a lot of years, a lot of growing up, to be at a very different place, a better place, a place where I'm not stuck in believing one thing, but being open to new thoughts and ideas, open to growth. It's not the easiest thing to do. It's not as simple as saying, don't be closed-minded. Don't be a one-way thinker. What it takes is what Jesus told the one-way thinker in our story today. What did he tell him? Be silent. Be silent. Be silent and listen. Be silent so you can hear people's stories. Be silent so you can understand why people think the way they do. Be silent so you can understand why someone experiences truth the way they do. And you never know. You may realize that you do too. Amen and amen.